microwave oven and sink, some other equipment she didn't recognize, two padded chairs, a desk with a computer atop it, and a smaller chair in front of it. And a big metal cylinder sitting in the middle of the floor, crowding the already cramped quarters. One end of the cylinder was attached to a large pair of tanks and a miniaturized cryostat.
"Is that a doer?" Cardenas asked.
George nodded. "Had to hide the woman inside it from Humphreys."
"She's dead?"
"Preserved cryonically," George said. "There's hopes of reviving her."
"She won't be much company."
"Afraid not, but I'll pop back here every few days, see that you're okay." Stepping toward the desk, trying to hide her anxiety, Cardenas asked,
"How long will I have to stay here?"
"Don't know. I'll have a chat with Dan, see what we should do."
"Call Doug Stavanger," she said. "He'll protect me."
"I thought you didn't want to put him in the middle of this scrape."
She wrapped her arms around herself, trembling with cold fear.
"That's before I knew you were going to put me out here." "Hey, this isn't so bad," George said, trying to sound reassuring. "I used to live in temples like this for months at a time."
"You did?"
"Yep, me and my mates. This is like home sweet home to me."
She looked around the place again. It seemed smaller than her first view of it, closing in on her. Nothing between her and the deadly vacuum outside except the thin metal of the shelter cylinder and a heaping of dirt over it, and a corpse in the middle of the floor taking up most of the room.
"Call Stavanger," she pleaded. "I don't want to stay here any longer than I have to."
"Sure," said George. "Let me talk to Dan first."
"Make it quick."
"The magnetic shield is going to blow up?" Dan asked for the 30th time. Pancho sat across the table from him in Star Power One's wardroom. Amanda was on the bridge as the ship raced at top acceleration back toward Cellini. Fuchs was in the sensor bay, assaying the samples he'd chipped from Bonanza. "You know how superconductors work," Pancho said grimly. "They have to stay cooled down below their critical temperature. If they go above that temperature, all the energy in the coil gets dumped into the hotspot."
"It'll explode,"
Dan muttered. "Like a bomb. Lots of energy in the superconductor, boss. It's a dangerous situation. There's more than one hotspot. Four of them so far. Wouldn't be surprised if more of them crop up. Whoever bugged this ship didn't want us to get back home." Dan drummed his fingers on the tabletop. "I can't believe Chris Cardenas would do this to me." "It's Humphreys, pure and simple," said Pancho. "He could kill you with a smile any day. But he'd need Chris to do this." "Look," Pancho said, hunching forward in her chair. "Doesn't matter who spit in whose eye. We got troubles, and we've got to figure out how to save our necks before that magnetic coil goes up like a bomb." Dan had never seen her look so earnest. "Okay, right. What do you recommend?" "We shut down the magnetic field."
"Shut it down?
But then we'd have no radiation shield. Don't need it unless there's a flare, and we can probably get back to Cellini before the sun burps another one out." "Probably," Dan growled. "That's the chance we take. I like those odds better than letting the coil's hotspots build up to an explosion that'd rupture the ship's skin." "Yeah, you're right," Dan said reluctantly. "Okay, then." Pancho got up from the table. "I'm going to shut it down now." "Wait a minute," said Dan, reaching for her wrist. "What about the MHD channel?" Pancho shrugged. "No problem so far. Probably hasn't been bugged. If it goes, we're dead, right?" "Well," she drew the word out, "we could dump the coil's energy in a controlled shutdown. That wouldn't affect the thrusters, but we'd lose our electrical power. We could run on the fuel cells and batteries for a while. Long enough?" Pancho laughed and headed for the hatch. "Long as they last, boss," she said over her shoulder. "Murphy's Law," Dan growled after her. "If anything can go wrong, it will." That was Murphy's Law. "Now I can add Randolph's corollary to it," he thought. "If you turn off your radiation shield, you are certain to be hit by a solar flare."
Messages. George shooed everyone out of the Mission Control Center except for the chief, who insisted hotly that the center must have at least one human controller on duty at all times. If he'd been a man, George would have simply picked him up and heaved him through the door out into the corridor. Instead, the chief on this shift was a rail-thin, pasty-faced, lank-haired woman with the personality of an Arkansas mule. She would not leave the center. Restraining the urge to lift her off her feet and carry her out to the corridor, George pleaded,
"I've got to send a private message to Dan Randolph. I can't have anybody listening in on it."
"And why not?" she demanded, hands on hips, narrow nostrils flaring angrily.
"None of your fucking business," George snarled. "That's why not."
For long moments they glared at each other, George towering over her, but the woman totally unfazed by him.
"It's Dan's own orders,"
George said at last, stretching the truth a little.
"This is ultra-sensitive stuff."
The woman seemed to think that over for a second, then said more reasonably,
"You take the console over there on the end. I'll set you up with a private channel. Nobody else in here but you and me, and I won't eavesdrop, okay?"
George started to say no, but realized that this was the best he could accomplish, short of physical mayhem. Before he could agree, though, Frank Blylevin pushed through the double doors, his normally smiling face wrinkled into a puzzled frown. "What's going on here?" the security chief demanded, walking up the aisle between the consoles. "I got a report that you're throwing controllers out of the center." Heaving an impatient sigh, George explained all over again that he had to get a message through to Dan.
"In private," he said. "Nobody listening in."
Blylevin crossed his arms over his chest and tried to look authoritative. It didn't work. To George, he looked like a red-faced shopping mall Santa in Mufti. "Very well," he said. "Send your message. I'll sit by the corridor door and make certain nobody disturbs you." Surprised, George thanked him and headed for the console that the chief controller had indicated. Blylevin went to the last row of consoles and sat down at the one closest to the door. Surreptitiously, he tapped the keyboard a few times. When George finished his message and erased it from the comm system's memory core, Blylevin had a copy that he could peddle to Humphreys.
Dan felt nervous as he watched Poncho and Amanda shut down a radiation shield. Dumping all that electromagnetic energy didn't bother him. It was the idea that now they had no protection against another solar storm except the thin hull of the ship itself. "Shutdown complete," Poncho announced. "Magnetic field zeroed out." "Zero field," Amanda confirmed. "Naked to mine enemies," Dan murmured. "How's that, boss?" Poncho asked, looking up over her shoulder toward him. "I feel naked," Dan said. "Don't worry. Sun looks calm enough, for the time being. Even if it shoots out a flare, we can always get into our suits and go for a swim in one of the fuel tanks." "That wouldn't be very helpful," Amanda pointed out, not realizing that Poncho was joking. "The high-energy protons would set off all sorts of secondary particles from the fuel's atoms." Poncho frowned at her. Amanda looked from her to Dan and then back to her control panel. "I think I'll go back and see how Lars is doing," she said, getting up from her chair. "Have fun," Poncho said. Dan watched her step through the hatch, then slid into her vacated chair. "Don't look so glum, boss. We're batting along at 1/3 G with no sweat. Be back in lunar orbit in less than 4 days." "I had wanted to stop to sample those other two rocks," Dan said. "Can't take the chance. Better to..." "Hold one. Incoming message from Cellini. George Ambrose." "I'll take it here," said Dan. "By the way, have you told Mission Control that we've shut down the shield?" "Not yet, but they'll see it on the telemetry. It's recorded automatically." Dan nodded as George's bushy, red-maned face appeared on the screen. Quickly, in a worried whisper, George explained how he'd located Cardenas and spirited her off to the temporary shelter. "She wants to see Stavanger," George concluded. "Well, I told her I'd talk to you first. She'll be perfectly okay in the tempo for a couple of weeks if we need to keep a stash there. So, what do you want me to do, Dan?" George's image on the screen froze. Dan could see that he must have been at the Mission Control Center when he'd sent the message. Good. He must have cleared out the place to make sure nobody could eavesdrop. "Now I've got to send him a reply that just about anybody can listen to," Dan thought. This is going to be like an old-time mafioso speaking into a...